How scary is it in this day and age how much we rely on modern technology? It's not till your phone dies or the Wi-Fi or power goes off that you realise you'd be lost without it. Well, recently my phone decided in its old age to die and stop charging, and on a weekend no less. So what do? Rather than waiting to speak to the network providers or retail outlets, which can be painful within itself, give Brad or Katie a call at Greenies Apple Repairs. That's what I did, and they had my old phone as good as new in hours. Greenies take care of iPhones, iPods, iPads and pretty much everything else, and they won't cost you an arm and a leg. So next time you're stuck back in the dark ages with no technology, contact Greenies Apple Repairs on 0401 229 220 or you can contact them at www.greeniesrepairs.com.au or find them on Facebook. Now just to get onto this busted screen. This week I had the pleasure of sitting down with the lovely Tiff Porter to speak about her journey and how her mental toughness helped her overcome some massive challenges. This includes a recent horse riding accident resulting in her breaking 3 vertebrae and her leg, and her recovery from this, including physical and mental challenges, will inspire and highlight the power of the mind. Tiff speaks openly about her journey into motherhood and the challenges she, her husband and many families endure while going down the IVF path. She gives some great advice to others going down the same path and those supporting them. She speaks about her early days, bouncing around a few home situations, struggles at school and in the workplace, including bullying and confidence issues, and the importance of having close friends and good people around you in life. I knew Tiff previously, but once again, this chat highlights just how much we really know about people and the challenges in life many people have overcome to get to where they are today. Talk hard!
Like, of course I'm not going to walk again. Like, that's just the reality, isn't it?
And the doctor that rang Mum said, oh, we've saved your son's life.
And I remember looking up and just saying, that wasn't out. And he looked at me and he said, no, it wasn't. But I didn't want to give you not out because you're my son. And I said, fuck me, Dad.
I just remember her telling us your daughter's got leukemia.
During school, I always swapped class a couple of times.
Who's cluier out of the two?
Both got the same smartness. Not real smart at all.
If you are dedicated to something, as long as it's safe and it's not hurting anyone else, I don't think anything should hold you back.
Keep pushing forward, you know. Days get tough sometimes. You know, it does turn around. You just gotta fight for it a little bit.
I was like, why can't we be that 1% that survived? She said to me then, she goes, you were more like me than I ever realised.
The Talk Hard Podcast with Brendan Hinkson.
Tiff Porter, welcome to the Talk Hard Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Brendan.
No worries at all. How are you feeling? You're raring to go?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, you did tell me beforehand, if you do start to get a little bit nervous, we have to relocate outside around a fire pot, apparently.
Oh,
crack
yes.
A couple of cans.
Oh, yes, the good old fire pot stories.
This is when you come into your own, apparently, isn't it?
Have been known to, yes. I do like a bit of a session around the fire pot with friends.
Yeah, bit of a sing-along.
Oh, a little bit, but probably more the stories come out, the embarrassing stories.
Are they the ones that we're going to hear today, or do you normally just keep them just
for your
close
friends? They're just for the fire pot and just the close friends.
Right. So you're saying I should get your close friends on as a follow-up to this one.
Yeah,
we'll get the real story.
You might get it all out then.
Now, mate, it's awesome to get you on. Like, I'd been wanting to get you on for a little while because a lot of people would know a little bit about your story and, you know, a few of the bigger parts of it, which we'll obviously get to. But I know I say it all the time, but one of the things that I love about what we do here and getting people in is because, you know, we work together and I've known you for quite a while, but just from the information that we've spoken about prior to coming on, there's so much that I've learned about you. So that's what I love about this format is there'll be people out there that there's certain things, particularly about your early life and stuff that people don't know about.
Yeah, sure.
So it's giving people a little bit of an insight as well. So
I was just chatting to an old real estate friend just before, actually, and we were talking about how you really actually don't get to know someone that well until you go to their funeral.
Yes.
Which is really quite upsetting. And we sort of had a discussion that maybe if in time you knew that you're on your way out, perhaps you have a bit of a shindig before and tell people how you feel.
Yeah. Well, hopefully these podcasts aren't like a prelude to people being on their way out.
Let's hope not.
I think we've got a clear strike rate so far, so you'll be fine.
Good to hear.
So take us back, mate. Like, whereabouts were you born? Devonport?
I was born in Devonport. Mum had me when she was only the age of 19.
Right, yep.
Yeah, where I look back now and I think, wow, if I was 19, I wouldn't have thought about having kids, but there you go.
It seemed to be the norm back then, though. They seemed to have them quite young. I don't know whether or not they were mature at an earlier age. I wouldn't have been any good at that age.
No. I think Mum and Dad were probably a little bit silly. Dad dad jokes that I was made in the back of a panel van. So, wow, Dad, that's so romantic. Thanks for that.
Too much info, Dad.
Too much information.
Yeah. So what were the early years like for you, mate?
Interesting. I wasn't actually raised by mum and dad.
Right.
I was for the first 4 years.
Yep.
But unfortunately, they split up when I was four.
Yep.
And I say unfortunate, it was probably a good thing because unfortunately mum and dad had a very abusive kind of relationship.
Right.
So I don't really remember, because I was only four, I don't really remember a lot of what family life was like.
Yep.
Before then. All that I do remember is that I remember them having like an argument one night, and my half-sister and I were in the bath, and their mum just come running in, grabbed me and rushed me off to the car and we're gone.
Yeah.
And at the time, I didn't really know what was going on apart from I could hear their argument, and I was crying to mum saying, I've got no clothes on, Mum.
Yep.
I've got no clothes.
Yep.
That's all I was worried about.
Yep.
But, yeah, I think I'm pretty sure Mum and I probably went and stayed with one of her friends for a little while until the dust settled a bit, and then we went and lived with Mum's parents.
Yep.
Who actually ended up really becoming my parents.
Yep.
As well. Not just my grandparents, but my parents.
Yep.
And I spent all my primary school years with them. Mum moved on and had a boyfriend, and they went off to the mainland to find work, and Nan and Pop sort of said, well, she's about to start kinder, like maybe it'd be a good idea if you leave Tiff behind here with us and you go off to the mainland.
Yeah.
So
do you remember that time, do you? Were you...
Not particularly. I've seen a photo of Mum and I in the airport and she was cuddling me goodbye.
Yep.
I don't remember being upset or anything like that.
Yep.
I think because I spent a lot of time with Nan and Pop previously, wasn't a big deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'd adjusted pretty well to it.
Yeah, totally fine. I was pretty close with my Pop. I remember when I did go off to kinder, he had to stay the week with me when I started kinder. And I referred to him as Dada.
Yep.
When I was younger.
Yep.
Yeah, but no, I had a good childhood, like with Nan and Pop. They were my stability, basically, and gave me a good life.
And your mum ended up moving back, though, didn't she?
She did come back with us. Yeah, yep. I can't really remember how long she went for. I know it was for a few months.
Yep.
And then when Mum come back, I didn't want to go, like, and live with her.
You're comfortable.
I was in a routine. I was comfortable.
Yep.
So that's where I stayed. We're thinking about, like, having my own children now. It's like, oh, there's no way I could have left my kids when they were four.
Yeah.
But, you know, she had me when she was young, different circumstances.
Have you ever talked to her about it? Was it hard on her?
Oh, look, we have had a couple of little conversations, but... Nothing too serious.
Yep.
Yeah. Has it affected me? Perhaps it has. Maybe not that close because of it. Maybe. I'm not too sure.
Yep.
It's how it was, and I just feel so thankful that I had my Nan and Pop.
Yeah. And when your mum came back, obviously a big part of your story, which we get into later on as well, but a big part, like, right throughout has been horse riding. And was you actually your mum that led you into horse riding, wasn't
definitely.
It? Is that right?
Yeah, mum was riding from a very early age.
Yep.
Apparently it's back in the genes somewhere in the family, so they tell us.
Yep.
So I'd go along to all the horse events with mum, and then mum brought me a pony. And I'm pretty sure... seemed to be like everything happened when I was four.
Yep.
But yeah.
Big year.
Yeah, big year apparently. So I got my first pony when I was four. His name was Nippy and he was horrible. He used to bite me. He used to bark.
Yep.
I actually didn't like the pony, but we went along anyway to pony club and I competed in a few shows alongside mum. So I really probably could have stopped riding at the time because he was such a horrible pony.
Yep.
But there you go. I still loved horses and kept on with it.
Yeah. So what did you love about horse riding?
I think it's just the freedom.
Yep.
Yeah. Just and knowing that you're controlling this live animal.
Yep.
And they do give you love back. They like to nuzzle into you and almost like a cuddle.
Yep.
Yeah. Their little eyes on them. Mm.
It's funny, I've only ridden a horse once, and I found it very unnerving because I thought, this thing's got a brain and it can actually go where it wants to go. Absolutely. Like, if this horse decides to go that way and I don't want him to, he's going because he was a big boy. Whereas, you know, if you're on a motorbike or driving a car, like, you'd like to think that you're pretty much
in control. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a different sort of dynamic. Tell me about running, because you're also a good runner at a young age, weren't you?
I was a good runner at a young age. Yep. Pop was my running coach.
Yep.
He did a bit of coaching and running himself when he was younger. So he would get me down to the fourth oval there, the footy fourth oval, and I'd be doing laps, getting swept by all the plovers down there. And I'd be ducking and he's like, keep going, they won't hurt you.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'd have this tea towel wrapped around the back of my back and holding on to this tea towel so he could get my technique right with my arms.
Right, okay.
Yeah, but running was a big part. I used to win all my races at primary school, which was good. Like, it gave you a bit of confidence. But then I had some people would come up to me and say, oh, could you just slow down so I could win this race?
So you were a short distance sprinter, were you?
I was more of a long distance runner. And I would think to myself, well, that's not fair. So I didn't.
Yeah.
No.
How far did you end up going with your running? Was it a big passion, or was it just something that you sort of did as a
Something that I was naturally good at.
Yep.
Not necessarily a big passion that I want to be the best runner in the state or anything like that. I did go through to nationals, so I did compete for Tassie a couple of times. Once was in Darwin, and that was the All Schools Cross Country Championships in Darwin.
Yep.
That was interesting because coming from Tassie, freezing cold, and then up to Darwin, as soon as you get off the plane, it's just this humidity hits you.
Yeah.
I found that difficult because we had no time to adjust to the heat. My race was like at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it was already 32 degrees.
Yeah.
So I didn't really run that well at all.
Yeah.
It was mainly just good experience, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm not sure if it was the same year. It might have been the one after I competed in the Nationals Athletics Championships in Sydney.
Yep.
And went across there with a big team. Yeah.
Yep.
That was good fun.
Another big experience for you, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it was. And honestly, I don't think I really placed in any of those runs.
Yep.
Just because I was good back here in Tassie and made the state teams. They're just freaks on the mainland. Yep. Next level.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Tell me about your high school years, because you moved back in with your mum for high school, didn't you? And then you had to move schools, didn't you? Or move to a different area than most of your friends. It was a bit tricky for you.
It was tricky. Nan instigated it. I think the fact that Nan had already raised three teenage girls.
Yep.
And I don't think she really wanted to do it the fourth time.
She'd done her apprenticeship in that.
She had done. And because I hadn't really lived with mum for much of my childhood, it was, a good time to move on and live with mum and my stepdad.
Yep.
My stepdad I got on really well with.
Yep.
He just treated me like I was his own daughter.
Yep.
We used to do lots of four driving together and fishing and camping, Strawn, Sandy Cape, at the Great Lakes.
Yep.
So I spent a lot of time with them in school holidays and weekends anyway. So to move in with them full time wasn't really a big deal.
Yep. Wasn't a big shock to your system.
No. And then I went off to, I went off to Ulverston High School.
Yep.
That was a little difficult because pretty much all my friends went through to Devonport High.
Yep.
So trying to, create friendships with people was quite difficult.
Yep.
You
were the new kid. Yeah, you didn't have that history.
That's right. And I come from a little school at fourth. We had pretty small numbers there.
Yep.
Little country school. And I was a pretty shy kid too.
Yep.
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 Yeah,
so you didn't sort of put yourself out there. It was a bit tricky for you making friends.
Yeah, it was. It was tricky making friends. And unfortunately, I did get bullied quite a bit.
Yep.
At high school, for the first couple of years especially. And I think that was to do with I had braces at the time. They were new, and back then not everyone had braces like they do today.
Yep.
So I was one of the rare kids with the train tracks, as they would call me.
Yep.
My surname was Bird, so then they'd call me Bird Turd.
Yep.
I had extremely skinny legs, so then I'd be called Sticks. And so I'd go home a lot of an evening and cry to mum. And anyway, I pushed through, and then I'm not sure if it's because I was having a hard time at high school or not, but mum got given a horse. It was a quarter horse. Don't think we had Nippy at the time. I think he was long gone. And so I joined up at the pony club up at Penguin, and that was really good. I met some really nice friends there. And a couple of the girls actually left their high schools and came over to my high school.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, so that was pretty awesome. Yeah.
So how did you slowly start to form some friendships at Ulverston before these girls came over? Or?
Yeah, I did. Not many, though. Maybe only like one or two people.
Yeah.
So like, recess and lunch was a bit lonely.
Yeah. But you still pushed yourself to go to school, though?
Like... Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, I didn't really have a choice.
Yeah.
You had to go to high school, so that was it.
It's funny, too, with bullying, though, how it's changed over the years. Obviously, it's still prevalent these days, but back in those days, like you said, you'd go home and you'd cry. You'd get a little bit of a break from it until you then went back to school again, whereas these days now, with the phones and technology, you know, people can be on Snapchat bullying people at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a different world now, unfortunately.
Yeah. So was it just like your mental strength that got you through it, do you think, or did you do any other strategies going back to school to cope with it?
I actually think horses is what helped me.
Yep.
I would focus on the horses after school, what I was going to do, riding, and then we'd have competitions. So I'd focus on training up for the competitions, and weekends were always a pony club or a competition somewhere. So that was my main focus. School, I went and did what I had to do. And I think they helped me through, to be honest.
Yeah. Mm. And it's funny because obviously you're probably too young to know, you know, whether you were, you know, suffering mental health wise or anything like that. But for people that are, sometimes it is just finding that one thing, that one outlet, isn't it? That
it
sort
is.
Of gets you back. Actually, a good friend of mine was really struggling, and she loved riding horses and she hadn't ridden for years. And I said to her, why don't you get back into it? This was about 18 months ago, and she got back into it since and has loved it. And, you know, we'll talk about you and Giselle riding in a second, but she also has a daughter riding with her now, and I think that's been one of the big pillars that sort of got her back on track. And just, yeah, finding that one thing for her, it just made a hell of a difference for us. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, you've just got to find that one thing that just keeps you going, don't you?
You certainly do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So high school finished, and then you moved back in with Nan and Pop again.
I did move back in with Nan and Pop, and the main reason for that is I was doing quite well at my running.
Yep.
And I really needed a coach, and probably a little bit more advanced from Pop.
Yep.
Because he was old school coach.
Yep.
And I did know that there was a very good coach that was teaching at Don College, and so I decided, I'm going to go back to Nan and Pop's, go to Don College, have an awesome running coach.
Yep.
And also, I knew a lot of people that were going to Don. So it was kind of a bit of a no-brainer. Probably didn't go down real well with mum and my stepdad, but that's what I wanted to do. So they supported me. I think they were really wanting me to stay and go on to Helier.
Yep.
I didn't know anyone at Helier. I didn't know how I'd go over there running. I didn't know a coach.
You'd been through the whole new school thing once already.
Exactly.
I imagine you didn't want to go and do that again.
No, absolutely not. And then I did have two brothers as well.
Yep.
So mum and my stepdad Greg, they had Hayden when I was 13 years old, so in grade 7.
Yep.
And then Nathan, I'm pretty sure I was about 14 when Nathan came along.
Yep.
And that was an awesome time. I absolutely loved my little brothers.
Yep.
There is times where I would actually go and wake them up so I could give them a cuddle. When I left, I'm pretty sure Hayden was about to start kindergarten, and I honestly didn't really think too much about how they felt about it, which sounds really horrible now.
Yeah.
But I suppose when you're like, how old was I? 15, something like that.
Yeah.
You don't really think about other people as much. But now I look back, I think, oh, it probably did affect them a little bit.
Yeah.
Mum did mention that Hayden would actually dress up in one of my 90s and sleep in my bed for quite a few weeks after.
He might have been missing me.
When it comes to home renovations, there's nothing more important than getting the kitchen right. So you've got two options. Have a crack at it yourself and then get someone else in to fix it, or get the team at Infinite Joinery and Designs in from the start to avoid a lot of stress and dirty looks from the better half. If you're thinking of renovating your kitchen, give Sam and the team at Infinite a call straight away. Specialising in kitchen renovations, they can also take care of new home joinery fit-outs, renovations, laundries, wardrobes. They have 3D design software, and Sam alone has over 20 years' experience in joinery and project management. Find them on Facebook and Instagram, or phone Sam on 0429 291 008, or by email, which is sam@infinitejoineryanddesign.com. So don't be like me, thinking you'll save a few bucks and have a crack at it yourself. Call these guys in so you can sit back and watch the experts go to work. So after Don College then, so then your work life started. So tell us a little bit about your jobs.
So I ended up going on to TAFE.
Yep.
And doing Cert 2 and 3 in Business Office Administration.
Yep.
I didn't go on to uni because at that time I found there was real stigma of uni, that only the intelligent kids went on to university.
Yep.
And I found that I was just, you know, everyday kind of kid learning. I wasn't bright. I wasn't, you know, not silly, but just the average student, really.
Mm.
So I didn't think that uni would be something that I would be able to do. And I think, plus, no offence to Nan and Pop and Mum, but and my dad, they never spoke about, you know, maybe you should go on to university. What would you like to do? Because no one in our family ever went on to uni.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I went on to TAFE and did those certificates. So that was great. I ended up getting a job at McDonald's. I worked there for quite a while, and at Sports Power.
Yep.
So they were casual jobs while I was going to TAFE. And then I needed a bit more like a full-time job, because I'm like at the stage where, you know, money's important.
Mm.
I got a job at the towel factory.
Yep.
At the time. And that was shift work. That was interesting. That was something completely different.
So night shifts?
Night shifts, yeah. Afternoon shifts, day shifts.
And how old were you?
I'm thinking I would have been about 19, 20.
Yeah, righto.
Yeah. I did move out of Nana Pops, though. I did have a boyfriend. I had a younger boyfriend years ago, like college, and he did the whole cheating thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, and then I ended up with another fellow. We were together for a couple of years, but that was a bit of a toxic sort of relationship, that one.
Yeah.
And Merrick came about because I met him through a mutual friend, and I was just getting out of that toxic relationship.
Yeah.
So that needed to happen. We started seeing each other, and he sort of got me motivated to get back out and about and do things, and just to be a little bit more aware about my finances, because I used to live from week to week my finances.
Yep.
He was, you know, very motivated with saving.
Yep.
So he helped me in that respect. So he was the one who kind of was a bit more driven, and, you know, sort of said, well, you know, if we want to have a future together, what do you want to do, like career path and everything? And I wasn't enjoying the factory work. So I actually went around all the places in Devonport that I thought that I might like to work at. With my resume, I ended up with a retail job at a clothing store at the time called Split Image.
Yep, remember that one.
Wasn't there for very long because I got a call from Esley Dunham.
Yep.
He was the manager of Roberts Real Estate.
Yep.
One of the loveliest men I've ever met.
Yep.
Dear Esley. And he actually gave me a job in Ulverston, working in the office over there. He said to me, look, I can see that you've done the hard yards, you've done all your certificates, so let's put it all into practice.
Yeah, right.
I want to put you on.
Yeah. Like,
excellent. Anyway, I loved working with the team at Roberts Real Estate over in Ulverston.
Yeah.
I was there for a good, I guess, a couple of years.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I did work with someone who was a bully.
Yeah.
So that wasn't very pleasant at all, and that got quite bad to the extent where I had to note everything that was always said.
So can you give us an example of what sort of workplace bullying you were getting at the time?
He would come into the office and he'd just throw things down on your bench, on your table.
Yeah.
And say, oh, I need this done in the next half an hour. But just really abruptly and really rudely. And if you happened to make the smallest mistake, my goodness, would you hear about it?
Right.
And he'd actually slam down his hand on the table. This is not good enough. And anyway, he just used to carry on quite a lot, which wasn't really pleasant at all.
Did you speak to anyone at work about it?
Yeah, and everyone was aware of it.
Right.
They seen and heard everything and...
Was it just towards you or was it towards others as well?
Mainly just towards me.
Right.
I'm not quite sure why. I really have no idea why. But thankfully, I did work with a really supportive team and an awesome manager.
Yeah.
During that time at Roberts, they actually put me through my real estate license.
Yep.
That was really good. And when I was doing my license, I actually met Mandy McGuire. She was doing her license at the time, and she was just opening up her first franchise, which was Harcourt's.
Yep.
After I completed my real estate license, because you've got to sit for the exam. It's not easy.
No.
Can't just get your license.
Yep.
A few weeks later, Mandy called me and said, I'd like you to come and work for me. I'm like, sure. All right then. Merrick and I were living in Devonport at the time.
Yep.
So that's fine. I'll work closer to home. So I worked in the office there and really enjoyed that. That was a new modern office, and Harcourt's was the only one up the coast at the time.
Yeah.
And then I ended up becoming Mandy's PA, and that was quite good. But what I was doing for her, even she said, you could be doing this yourself.
Right, yep.
So that's when I went out on my own and started selling houses.
Yep.
That was good. I enjoyed that. As you know, being a real estate agent before, it's full on. Mm. Like, your weekends are not yours.
Mm.
Your nights are not yours.
You're on call all the time, aren't you? You're on
call 24/7.
Yep.
It was quite ironic how you'd get home on a Saturday lunchtime after doing all these open homes and you get, your daggy clothes on, start doing your housework because that's the only time you had. And then you get a phone call. I want to look at a house.
Yeah, or I want to make an offer.
I want to make an offer. I'm like, oh, my God. Go get all kitted back up again and off you go.
Yep.
Yeah, anyway, I enjoyed it until the kids came along and then it's like, yeah, can't do that anymore.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And so talk to us about your kids. So Giselle's your eldest. And so she was planned? You always wanted to be a mum at that age? Or?
Yeah. Merrick was probably a little bit more ready than I was.
Yep.
He was a little bit older than me. I think we're only about 4 years difference. But, I didn't want to have kids too young. I wanted to, explore the world a little bit.
Yep.
We did do a couple of overseas holidays before then, which I'm so pleased that we did. And plus, we also were very driven to pay a house off too.
Yep.
Before having children. So then I was able to then stay at home and look after the kids and not have to go back to work.
Yep.
I thought that was pretty important. That was something that we wanted to do, that I'd be the stay-at-home mum.
Yep.
Which was great until Giselle was about one. Then I'm like, oh, I need to do something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to get out. Yep. I need to talk adult.
you can only talk baby for so long, can't you?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Get back into society.
Exactly. Yeah. So I ended up working at Michael Burr Real Estate.
Yep.
Just a couple of days a week, which was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I started working with you, Brendan.
Yep.
Yep.
And that was, I think we met after, it was the second time you came back, wasn't it?
Would have been the second time. Yeah. I reckon it was when I had Hudson.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But no, that was awesome. I loved working with Michael and Helen. As a lot of people probably know, it's a family business.
Yep.
Yeah. And they did treat us like we were part of their family.
Mm, yep.
So yeah, then I had a Hudson, but yeah, that was a road and a half, that one.
Yeah, talk to us about that. So obviously Giselle was pretty straightforward.
Yeah. So Giselle was natural.
Yep.
She ended up being an emergency cesarean. We probably don't really need to get into that nitty gritty stuff, but she was a big baby and positioned the wrong way.
Yep.
I did have a full labour with Giselle, and then they realised she was positioned the wrong way, so
yep.
emergency caesarean with her.
Yeah.
Because things weren't going so well. Yeah, and then, of course, we wanted to have another child. So Giselle had a sibling. And that was a bit of a drawn-out process. We tried probably a couple of years after Giselle was born.
Yeah.
We wanted to do the, you know, ideal two-year gap thing.
Yeah.
Which was blown out to 4 years. Yeah, so my husband at the time, he was having some health issues and he did go and see a specialist. Unfortunately, this specialist told him that he would never be able to have any more children again.
Right.
So that was absolutely devastating because all we wanted was a sibling for Giselle.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know what, I just can't fathom that. We're definitely going to have another child one way or another. So I looked into adoption and went and had a meeting. That was absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
It was at least a 5-year wait.
Yep.
Was
this adopting from another country?
Another country.
Or? Right, yep.
At least 5 years.
Yep.
And extremely expensive. But a lot of the actual countries had stopped adopting out to Australia at the time.
Right.
And then there's also the option of having local adoption of Australia. And I thought, well, that could be an option. The only trouble with that is the mums that are having the babies have got 5 portfolios they can choose from.
Right.
So you had to put forward a portfolio. So the chances is out of 5 being chosen.
Yep. So it's basically a job interview.
Basically.
To be the mum for their child.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right.
That's exactly what it was like. Plus, it's not as common as it used to be, adoption in Australia.
Yep.
Because the, you know, the young children, well, call them children, young late girls, that are having kids now, they're entitled to so many benefits.
Mm.
So they can actually afford to keep the children now.
Right.
Where years ago. They couldn't.
They had to.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was not looking like an option. I decided to go and see a psychic lady in Burnie.
Yep.
And she was absolutely incredible.
Yep.
Didn't know me from a bar of soap. I told her absolutely nothing. And her words were, "You don't think you can have any more children?" I'm like, "No." And she said, "Oh, that's because your husband's not well.
Yep.
And he's been told that he can't have any more." I'm like, "Yeah, how do you know all this?"
Mm.
And then she said, "You need to go down the road of IVF. Fertility will be able to help you."
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, actually, the specialist told us that fertility wouldn't be able to help us.
Yep.
And she said, "I can see twins in August next year, and I can definitely see a boy." I'm like, okay. So the next day, I get on the blower to IVF. "Can we have an appointment?" Sure, had to get the referral through from the doctor. And then a month later, we got to go and see Bill Watkins, who was the IVF specialist mm-hmm. in Hobart at the time. And he said, 50-50 chance. That's your odds. And we're like, okay, we'll take the 50-50 chance.
Mm, better than zero.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because we thought we had no hope.
Yep.
Anyway, yeah, so we had a couple of egg collections and 7 transfers later. We're pregnant with twins.
Yep.
And it's quite ironic because when you go along to IVF, you just think your first transfer, you're going to automatically be pregnant.
Yep.
That, and I can tell you now that is not the case.
Yep. So it took you 7 goes just to have the first.
7 goes.
Yep.
Yes. It's actually not a lot compared to what a lot of people are going through.
Mm.
But
I imagine each one's still hard though. Like when you.
Oh, it was so hard. Like emotionally,
mm.
you were just like on this emotional roller coaster And I did feel depressed all the time because it just consumed your thoughts. Mm. And we did separate ourselves from the outside world a fair bit.
Yep.
From friends.
Yep.
And family. And I guess at the time our friends were going on having their second child and all we wanted was a sibling for Giselle.
Yep.
But I must admit I did feel very grateful that we already had one child because a lot of people don't even have that. So we were lucky.
And you say you separated yourself from people. Was that because you just didn't want to talk to people about it or you knew they'd ask how it was going? Or?
Yeah, they would ask how it was going and I didn't want to be ended up in tears. And a lot of people just don't understand. Unless you've been through some things, you just don't understand.
Yeah. I know I've spoken on this before, like a good friend of ours who you know as well, they've been through it, pretty extensively through it. And I still remember, saying to myself, don't worry about it, it'll be fine, it'll just happen and all this sort of stuff. Which you think you're trying to help them, but now... I suppose being a little bit older and more mature and having a little bit more of an understanding, not that I've had to go through that, I've been very lucky, but I just think that's the worst thing that you can probably say to them, it'll just happen, don't even worry about it.
It'll happen when you're not even thinking about it. Yeah. You just got to learn to relax. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
They got no idea. But anyway, that's okay. You can't expect people to know either.
People mean well, but sometimes they're just not really helping though,
are
they?
No, they're not. No, not at all.
Yeah.
We were lucky that, so we pregnant with twins.
Yep.
And I just said to Merrick, see, I told you, the psychic said, and it was, sure enough, August.
Yep.
So there's definitely something in that, that's for sure.
She's pretty uncanny, Linda, isn't she, over in Burnie?
She certainly is. She's amazing.
Heard a lot of good stories about her.
She's definitely the best.
For anyone that doesn't believe in that sort of thing, go and have a chat to her. She'll soon turn you.
My word, she will. I'm proven of that factor, that's for sure.
So
we were pretty excited. We've got twins. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. We're going to have to get a big car. Where are we going to put all these kids?
Put another room on.
No, it was a pretty exciting time, but unfortunately, IVF specialist gave us a call and he said, oh, look, I know you're going to be excited, but unfortunately they've got very low heart rate, so I'm not expecting them to live. So we were just like, oh my gosh, what a kick in the belly that was. Mm. And it was quite rare because he did actually only transfer one embryo at the time and it split into two, which apparently is a rare thing.
Yep.
They can happen, and they can go on and be fine. Like, you can give birth and they're healthy, but obviously these two weren't. So at 10 weeks, I miscarried, and that was extremely painful.
Mm-hmm.
Not only physical, but mentally.
Yep.
And then got through that, and then about 4 months later, we had another transfer and pregnant again. This time one, and it was Huddy. He was the boy. Yeah, so he was the boy that Linda could see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just talking about, the emotions that you go through in that as well, how was Marek through it all? Because I'd imagine for you it's obviously hard because you're carrying the baby, but how are the men through these things?
Oh, yeah, look, they're just as bad as what we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. It affects them just as much, that's for sure. Because they want it just as bad as we do.
Yep.
And I guess for Marek, knowing that he was the reason why it wasn't happening at the time, that was really hard for him and his self-esteem.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you guys sort of have any strategies that sort of to work through it as a couple? Did it bring you closer together?
I feel like it did. Communication, you just had to communicate your feelings. Yep. Yeah, and just if I was crying, I just needed a hug, and it's just someone to say it's okay, we'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. Unless you've been through that sort of situation, you don't know how to handle it. But one thing I was going to ask you is, and you just said it before with communication, is there any other advice that you'd give people that are considering going through IVF or that are currently going through IVF?
To don't expect that it's going to happen right away. Be prepared that it is going to be a long road.
Yeah.
So you need to be driven and really want it.
Yep.
You need to have patience. Keep yourself busy because it will consume your thoughts all the time.
Yeah.
And be determined that it is going to work. You got to be positive that it is going to work. And I can tell you now, when it actually does, it's like you've just hit the jackpot.
Yeah.
And when you're holding that baby in your arms, forever how long it takes, it could take months, it could take years, it's worth every heartache.
Yeah.
Every tear.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And last one on that, what would you say is the best way to support a friend or a family member who's going through IVF? I know we spoke about there before that sometimes people can be insensitive without actually meaning to be.
Yeah.
What advice would you give somebody who's got a friend or someone close to them going through it?
Just for that friend, just to be there if they want to talk. Ask your friend, you know, would you like to talk about it? I'm here for you. If you want to talk about it, fine. If you don't want to talk about it, that's okay. Spend time with them. Go and do things together that you both enjoy.
Yeah. In the world today, mental health is an issue which thankfully more and more people are becoming aware of and comfortable speaking about. When choosing a professional to help you, what kind of service would you be looking for? At Lonvara, when asked to describe Mel Purcell's service, clients described it as real, compassionate, empowering, friendly, welcoming, inner strength building, a positive, safe, supportive environment, and she was described by one source as an absolute legend who enables change with love. Mel offers clinical counselling, hypnotherapy, and a professional service which is tailored to the individual. She has a personal approach and makes sure each client's experience is authentic to their needs while also ensuring full confidentiality. Winner of the 2022 Australian Allied Health Awards for Rural and Remote Excellence, you can self-refer or through your GP mental health care plan. Lonvara, believing in you. Now, we spoke earlier about your horse riding, but it seems like we've moved away from that a little bit. But were you still horse riding all through this time, or did you have a bit of a break when you started working and had your family?
Yeah, I did have a break with horse riding.
Yep.
And running. I guess it all happened probably when I turned 18.
Yep.
Because I was with a group of friends and we hit the nightclubs.
Yep.
Pretty hard.
Partied
every weekend.
Yep.
I think it was pretty much a whole year.
Yep.
I'm sure that we've got shares in the warehouse, I think it was called at the time.
As we all did at that age.
We all did at that time.
Yep. We had to occupy yourself somehow on a weekend.
You did. So running and horse riding was not a priority.
Yep.
Socialising was.
Yep.
And that's okay. Like, I'm glad that I had that time to have that party life. I didn't have a party life before that because I was always focused on horse riding and running.
Yep.
So I had a good break off horse riding and running.
Yep.
And it probably really wasn't until I had Giselle and she was showing interest in horse riding. I've always kept fit with running and going to the gym, but did have the big break off horse riding. Giselle started riding when she was 4.
Yep. Same age as you.
Same age as me.
Yep.
At a horse riding school in Penguin that Mum was help operating at the time.
Yep.
And yeah, so Giselle lives and breathes it. She goes to Pony Club and she competes on her pony. And I sort of decided, I might get back into it.
Yep.
And Giselle was quite excited to think, oh yeah, Mum and I could go off riding together.
Yep.
It's a cool thing to go and do together. So I started looking for another horse for myself. Now, I hadn't ridden for years, so I needed something pretty quiet just to get my confidence back up.
Yep.
I went and seen quite a few horses that weren't suitable. I did look at buying a sight unseen one from the mainland, who was guaranteed it was nice and quiet.
Yep.
And they were about to look at putting it on the boat for me, and I got cold feet, so I couldn't go through with it.
Yep.
And ironically enough, a couple of weeks later, there was one that come up for sale in Ulverston, and I went and rode him, and he was just beautiful. He was super quiet. He was a lot bigger than I imagined.
Yeah.
He's quite a tall horse. But because he seemed really quiet, I thought, you know what, doesn't matter. As long as Giselle and I'm having fun, then that's okay, and as long as I'm safe, it's all good.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had some good rides together. We went down the beach a couple of times, but he was a little bit excited on the beach, so I didn't really do much there. He was an ex-racehorse.
Yep.
We went out the bush. We rode in the arenas. I went along to Pony Club with her on my horse as well, so that was good. And then it would have been in February last year. We went and hired an arena. And we did that because Giselle needed to practice a fair bit of jumping because she had a competition coming up.
Yep.
And so we both went along. I did my dressage test because I decided, if Giselle's competing, I might as well start competing as well.
Yep.
And I felt like I probably had the horse that I could do that. So I was practicing a dressage test. That went really well. Then we popped the jumps out, and we're both going around nicely. And then Giselle's like, "Mom, we should put the jumps up a bit more." I'm like, "Yeah, sure, no worries. Let's do that."
Yep. And you said you didn't have safety vests on as well.
We didn't have our safety vests on. So
how do they work for a start? Like, how do they protect you?
Oh, yeah. So they actually protect your back and your kidneys.
Right.
So they wrap around you like a little rocket pack, really.
Yeah. See, I know nothing about horses and dressage and stuff, so that's why I'm going to ask you stupid questions.
No problem.
Yeah.
And what happened was I got Giselle and I a safety vest. Well, Santa got Giselle a safety vest.
Yep.
And we got them for the reason of safety falling off.
Yep.
That maybe, you know, it's to protect us, especially when we're jumping.
So they protect you on impact, do they? If you hit the ground.
Absolutely.
Okay, yep.
Yep. And a lot of the competitions now, you have to wear them.
Right.
Especially when you're doing cross country out in the bush and jumping.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the number one rule.
Yep.
You can't compete unless you have one.
Yep.
The weekend before we hired the arena, we left our safety vest at Pony Club. Anyway, I organised with a lady to pick up our safety vests on the way to the arena, and unfortunately, she forgot to put them out. Anyway, we decided, oh, well, we're on our way. We'll go anyway. We'll just have to ride without them. And, of course, it's one of those what if only I had my safety vest.
Sliding door moment.
Yep, sliding door moment for sure. So we were jumping, and then my horse took a really big leap over the jump, and I actually had spurs on at the time, and spurs are just to give them a little bit of a prick, just to move them on a bit more forward. And my horse is very slow, even though he's an ex-race horse. He was so lazy and so slow that I had them on when I was doing dressage just to make him go forward a bit more, which was fine, and he was okay with that. But I still had them on when I was jumping, and I think what happened was when he took the big leap over the jump, the spurs dug into his belly, and then he just went into this massive bucking frenzy.
Yep.
It was just like a bucking bronco horse at the rodeo.
So does that mean he's excited or he's scared or...?
Well, I guess he was probably scared from the big prick of the spurs.
Yep.
What, when I'm doing dressage, it's only like a tiny little...
Right.
And it doesn't hurt them, but I guess when he's landed and my legs have gone back, I guess it's gave him a bit more than just a little prick.
Yeah.
So he was bucking, and then I just did a big Superman, and I landed on the bottom, and I'd fallen off horses many times before, and I feel as though when I have fallen, I've sort of fallen off to the side on your shoulder or on your hip, but this time. And you kind of do a bit of a barrel roll. But this time it was on my bottom. And I couldn't breathe. I was winded. And I remember Mum saying, "Do you want me to call an ambulance?" And I'm like thinking, "Oh, we don't need an ambulance."
That's a bit extreme.
That's extreme. I'm just winded, Mum. I can't breathe. Anyway, when I finally got a breath, which felt like absolute eternity, I collapsed to the side.
So did you try to get up, did you?
No, just my back couldn't keep me upright any longer.
Right.
So I collapsed, and then that's when all the pain happened then.
Yep.
From then on, in my back.
How scary was that?
Oh, it was horrific, because the pain was just so overwhelming, and the kids were with me. They were so frightened. Mum's like ringing for the ambulance. And Hudson's like bawling, sitting beside me, rubbing my arm up and down and saying, "It's okay, Mummy, it's okay, you'll be okay." And then meanwhile, Giselle's running around like a crazy person, just screaming on top of her lungs for the ambulance to hurry up. So it was pretty traumatic.
Mm.
And it's not until now that Mum says to me, "You know, I actually thought I was going to lose you that day."
Wow.
I'm like, oh, gosh, okay. And I think from that moment on, Mum and I have come a lot closer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny how sometimes even shit things happen for a reason, don't they?
That's right.
Which we'll talk about later on.
Yeah, so that was not a good time. Yep. And I went down to Burnie, and then I had, you know, x-rays and MRIs. And
I was going to ask you too, though, even though you were in so much pain, were you... Were you aware of the kids and sort of trying not to frighten them, or you were just, you couldn't help yourself?
The
pain was that bad.
I could not control myself. My pain was that bad.
Yeah.
Which, and being a parent, as you know, you always try, you know, to keep your feelings.
To protect the
kids. Protect the kids. Yeah. But this particular time, no, I couldn't.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it, unfortunately, for them.
Yeah. So you knew you were in pretty big trouble.
Well, I didn't at the time. It wasn't until after the results come back from the X-ray and the MRI that they said, oh, we're going to fly you to Hobart, to the Royal, in the next half an hour. And we can't get the helicopter at the moment, but we'll get you on the plane. But just means you're going to have to take another ambulance trip to Devonport to catch the flying doctors.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's when I knew. I knew then, oh my gosh, I am in a state of bother here, aren't I? And they said, yeah, you've actually fractured your back.
Yeah.
And you need to go and see a neurologist specialist.
Yeah.
You're going to have surgery.
So because you'd landed like straight on your bum, all that weight's gone through your spine and just...
Yes.
Yeah, just
shattered
certain parts of it.
Yeah, yeah. So it ended up being my T10, 11 and 12 that I actually fractured. Yeah, so I flew down to Hobart, and then the next day I was to go in for surgery, but there was a car accident, and they took priority, and then I had to wait another day, and I remember the nurses and the doctors saying she can't be up any further than 30 degrees.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, oh, that's not, I don't get to go sit up very far. Like, I couldn't eat anything, so I had to fast, ready for surgery.
Yep.
So it was only a sip of water. So every time I wanted a sip of water, they'd only be able to put me up, you know, so far. And then I realised that's because my fractures are unstable, that the chances are pretty high that if they sit me up too far, the actual fractures could go into my spinal cord and I'll be paralysed.
Yeah.
So it was pretty serious. And did they ever say to me, you're going to be paralysed, you're never going to walk again? No one actually said that. I did know that the surgery was, you know, would be touch and go. Like, you're playing with someone's spine.
Mm-hmm.
So...
That must have been frightening for you, though. Like, were you?
It was frightening. It really was frightening.
Yeah.
Were
you thinking at any stage I might not walk out of here?
Not really. I'm very, very positive kind of person.
Yep.
So no, I didn't think that. And if it was going to be bad, I would do everything in my power that I would recover.
Yeah.
To some point. Would I be able to walk again? I hope so. Would I be able to run again? Maybe not, and that's okay. I could live with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but thankfully the surgery did go well, so that was awesome.
Yeah.
But I did complain a lot that my leg was quite sore.
Yep.
No one had listened to me, the doctors, the nurses. They were so, you know, fixated on my back because it was, you know, quite serious. So it wasn't until about 5 days after my surgery that physio came around. I had to put this back brace on. It was like a little rocket packet thing. Looked like I was about to go into space.
Yep.
And she said, you're going to have to get up today and we're going to have to try and have a walk. I'm like, oh, okay. All right then. I couldn't walk. And she said, you really can't put much weight on that leg, can you? And I'm like... No, I can't. It's really painful, and I've been trying to tell everybody. And she said, okay, let's do an X-ray. Sure enough, I broke my tibia.
Yep.
And it was actually down into my ankle where I actually fractured it, so off for another surgery. More pins and screws. So my anxiety going into that surgery was really high because I was just so, you know, worried about my back and the way that they were going to twist me around and pull me here, there and everywhere. And but yeah, thankfully that surgery was okay.
Yep.
Come out of that well. Yeah, but no. I had a good couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks I think it was, down there. They did want me to stay down there and do my rehabilitation down there in a proper clinic.
Yeah.
But I said, no, I can't. Like, I need to get home to the kids.
Because that was in COVID, you said. They couldn't come and visit you, could they?
No, they couldn't.
Or they could only in little short spurts or one at a time.
Children weren't allowed at the time.
That must have sucked.
That really sucked. So there was no point of them coming down to Hobart. You could have one visitor at a time, but that was only between the hours of 2 o'clock and 6 o'clock.
Yep.
So it was a pretty short window. So Marek had to juggle coming down, seeing me in those short little windows.
Yep.
And then also being there for the kids. They're about to start new year of school.
Yep.
They were staying with my aunt and uncle and getting pulled from pillar to post. So FaceTime.
Yep.
That was our friend. So I got to speak to them every day through that.
Yep.
And I would try and keep really strong for them. And then at the end of the chat, I'd be bawling, and apparently they were bawling at the other end too. So it was a really difficult time.
Just all missing each other.
Yeah, missing each other. I'd never really been away from the kids much at all, only a couple of days at a time. So
yeah,
it was pretty hard. Yeah.
So I bet you were happy to go home then.
I couldn't wait to get home. And, you know, I did that much physio down there. I was forever doing my exercises just so I could speed it up so I could get out and so I could get home.
And when you went home, though, you couldn't go to your place, could you, because it had stairs, is that right?
Yeah, so we've got stairs that go down into our bedroom. And we've got stairs at the front door. So it was not an option. I went and the kids and I went and lived with my aunt and uncle. They offered for us to go and stay there. They don't have stairs.
Yep.
So we went and lived with them for about, a good month.
Yeah, right.
Which was, they were saviours.
And so what did your rehab involve? What did you have to do?
Well, at the time, because it was still COVID times, and because I couldn't walk, like I had my back brace on, I had a moon boot on, I had a wheelchair that I actually borrowed from work.
Yep.
Thanks, Malaluka. And I had a walking frame when I was actually able enough to get up to walk with the frame. So I couldn't really get out. And because it was still, very much COVID, it was all online, like face-to-face.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So they were just guiding you through exercises and things, were they? Yeah.
And then when I was actually able enough, I did go off to... I had two different physios. I had physio Taz for my back.
Yep.
And I also had another physio down at the medical centre.
Yep.
For my leg, my ankle,
And you found that you got your strength and your mobility back pretty quickly once you started doing your exercises?
Yeah, I did. Yep. Yeah. And it goes to show it's so important to do your exercises.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think you told me there before, though, that some... I don't know whether you said or whether somebody else told you that the fact that you were very fit and active beforehand helped you as well.
Yeah, so the neurologist specialist, he was quite impressed with my recovery because I did recover quite quickly. And the fact was because I already was really fit and strong before my accident. Yeah, and he just said how important that was.
And we talked about it being COVID, and obviously COVID was hard enough on people, but you know for a time there not having a lot of mobility and stuff, it did take its toll on you, didn't it? It's, you sort of went into a little bit of a dark place as well, didn't
I? I did get depressed. We did end up with COVID. Giselle and I did. And I was really anxious about that because I thought, gee, if I get COVID and it's like a cough or a sneeze, that's going to be horrific on my back after just having surgery.
Yep.
Thankfully, it was just like a head cold.
Yep.
But no, I did go into a very depressive state. I think, number one, I wasn't at home. Number two, I was on some very heavy medication.
Yep.
When I was actually in hospital, I was just spaced out all the time. Like, it was though my body was alive, but for some reason, my brain kind of was just off in fairyland.
Yep.
Yeah, it was pretty horrible. And then when I started to wean off, I got very depressed. So we ended up going home, and I said, I'm coming home. Like, there's no questions about it. Like, I couldn't stop crying. I just wanted to be at home. And the stairs. Well, so what happened was, I got home, I got carried to the bedroom, and I lived in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, for quite a period of time until I was able to make my way up the stairs. And the only way I could conquer them was to actually use my upper body and my bottom.
Yep.
So I'd get myself down with my upper body onto the stair and slide my bottom up onto a step and then grab hold of my frame and a doorway and up I'd get.
Yep.
Yeah.
Your arms and shoulders would have been massive then at that time.
Well, they did get quite toned, yes.
That's one good thing.
Didn't need to do any weights for them.
You could skip arm day.
Yep.
This episode of the pod wouldn't be possible without the support of Alex, Sammy and the team at Shearwater Health and Fitness. Everyone needs a little bit of help and support at times, especially when it comes to health and wellness. Not only is Shearwater Health and Fitness supporting the Talk Hard podcast, but more importantly, they're committed to providing Shearwater and the surrounding community with a premium quality health and wellness facility. If you've been looking to take the first step or even the next step in your health and wellness journey, they provide a full class timetable, 24/7 gym, infrared sauna, Normatec recovery boots and a massage therapist. Something for everyone, whether you're a high performance athlete, mum, dad or just someone wanting to help be the best version of yourself. Call in and see them at 24 Shearwater Boulevard, which is right next door to the IGA, or you can check them out on Instagram and Facebook for all the details. And people were aware though that you were doing it pretty tough at that time, were they?
Yeah, they were.
Mentally, I mean?
Oh, mentally maybe not. I'm a bit of a humble person. I don't really like to, you know, admit that I'm, you know, struggling.
Yeah.
And need help.
So they weren't seeing you crying or anything?
They weren't
like
seeing
that?
Me crying. No, I didn't want people really knowing that. Only my really, really close friends.
Yep.
And family knew that I was struggling.
Yeah.
Did you find
that helped them knowing to have a chat to
them? Yeah, absolutely. And they'd call me. Yep. Every couple of days there'd be someone. Like, I was always on the phone just talking.
Yep.
Someone would be ringing, whether it was a family member or a friend.
Yep.
But the support was just unbelievable. Like, just people I didn't even know were reaching out to me and saying, hey, we've heard you've had an accident. If there's anything we can do. We can cook a meal. We can come and do your housework.
Yep.
Take you to an appointment.
Yep.
Devonport Christian School was just absolutely fantastic at the time. They did like this food chain. So every day we'd have some food at the door.
Yep.
They did a list of people that would make meals and drop it off to us. Care packages. Even awesome people like yourself and Bon, you know, shoot a message. Hey, do you need anything or want me to mow your lawns or anything like that? It was just so good to know that there was, you know, people out there that were willing to help.
Yep.
It was a time, though, I must admit, where you did find out who your true friends and family were.
I was going to ask you about that. I didn't know whether you wanted to talk about that, but can give us an example of how that came to light?
Yeah, it's funny because you just, you know, you associate with, you know, friends who you think that, you know, are there for you and your family through, you know, everything. And then all of a sudden you have this traumatic experience and you don't hear from them.
Yeah.
Not even a check-in to say, hey, how you going? And I don't mean that I want people to bow down to me or anything like that, but it would just be nice if, you know, a message came through that just to check in, see how you're going, if you need a hand. So it was a time where you did find out who the true friends and family really were.
Yeah. It is one of the easiest things that people can do, though, even just reach out. Like 99% of the time, the person doesn't need anything.
Absolutely.
But I think for the person in your situation, just knowing that people care and knowing that people are there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely. And it makes you motivated. Like, you've got those people there and it does. It gives you a good feeling and you are motivated to get better.
Yeah. And just going back to, you know, your mental health at that time, what do you think was the thing that brought you out of it? Was it getting better or did you have any particular strategies or was it just your own stubbornness to...
Oh, my own stubbornness for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was mainly once you got back on your feet, you know,
yes,
literally and physically.
Yeah.
That was the thing that got you out of it.
I was off and running. Like, and being stubborn, for an example, I went down to physio, mum took me. And I finally got some crutches. I was so excited to get crutches instead of this walking frame that made me look like I was, like, in my 70s. As soon as I got home, I'm like, I'm going to tackle these stairs.
Yep.
Well, that was not a good idea. I actually fell. And luckily for me, I actually fell forwards onto the stairs.
Yep.
And not backwards, because that would not have been pretty at all.
Could have set you back a bit.
Could have set me way back.
Yep.
Mum was ropeable.
So she was there with you, was she?
She was, and yep. She's seen it all. And, yeah, I guess I'm just known to overdo things a little bit too much.
But yeah. In saying that, like we said before, that might be part of the reason why you did recover so quickly.
Oh, definitely.
Because, you push yourself to the limit.
I'm very, very motivated, very driven, so...
Yep.
Yeah.
And tell me about the kids, because you said that they did have a few little effects from it, and they had to speak to someone. And
So we didn't quite realise how much it really affected them. Giselle, not so much. All Giselle was worried about was, can I steal horse ride?
Yep.
Yeah, as soon as I got back up the coast, she's like looking at me real weird. And I'm like, I know exactly what she wants to talk about. And it's got to do with the horses.
Yep.
And we said to her, look, you can steal horse ride. We're not going to stop you from doing what you love, but you have seen what can happen.
Yep.
So it's entirely up to you. Anyway, she was excited. No, she's still riding. Okay, then. No problem. Just make sure you wear your safety vest.
Yeah. In a way, though, for you, was it a bit of a relief that she did want to keep riding, to think that the incident hadn't sort of had a big effect on her?
Yeah, absolutely. Because anything that we do in life, something can happen, whether it's a horse, a bike, a car crash, or you could walk out and get hit by a car. Like, mm-hmm. There's so many things out there. So, no, it was a relief that she was still happy. Happy to go on and ride.
Yep.
Yeah. But Hudson, he used to have quite a few tears, especially when he'd hear an ambulance, his sirens. He'd just have, like, his face would just be, full of tears. It's like, what's wrong, buddy? Oh, it brings back bad memories.
Yeah.
When we'd go past the hospital, he'd be crying because it brought back bad memories.
Yeah.
So we did have to get some counselling for him. And thankfully he's good now.
Yep.
He won't get back on a horse. He has been on a horse a couple of times, but he finds it boring.
Yep.
He's more of a motorbike kind of kid.
Yep.
But he's okay that we're back riding now, but yeah, it took a long time for him to get over that.
I was going to ask you, like, with your kids, how proud of them are you through that time that, to where they are now? Like, obviously, as you say, Hudson's going well, but even with Giselle to get back on the horse.
So proud of my kids. They're amazing. Like, they're so resilient.
Yep.
What they seen that day and what they'll put through that day, I could totally understand if they were emotional wrecks.
Yep.
But no, they were really strong. They knew that they needed to be strong. I think they were trying to be strong for me. They were worried when I was in Hobart because they had a friend that went to the Royal Hobart Hospital and didn't return home. So that was pretty tough. When I'd get off the phone to Hudson, he'd be like, you are going to come home, aren't you, Mum? And I'd reassure him, yeah, bud, I'm coming home. Yep. Don't you worry. Yep. I'll be home. I don't know when, but I will get home to you. But no, I'm very proud of them. They went on to school. Obviously, it was quite hard for them to start the new school year without me there and being consumed of what had happened. But, yeah, they adapt.
They do. They're more resilient than we think. I think sometimes we try to wrap them in cotton wool, but, looking back with our parents, they never sort of wrapped us in cotton wool like we try to wrap ours in, and we seem to come out of it okay.
We come out of it pretty good.
Yeah. So I think sometimes we worry too much about them. But like you say, they're pretty resilient, aren't they?
They certainly are.
Yeah. So just, moving on to more recent things. So basically as soon as you got back on your feet again, you got back into a few risky activities, didn't you? You wanted to get back into...
Yeah, I did.
Back into a couple of things that you enjoyed doing.
Look, I'm not one to sit still. I can't just sit down all day and watch TV. So, I like to keep fit. I know how important it is. I went along, obviously, to physio, but then I went along to an exercise physiologist, to Ross Lovell. He part-owns Excel with my best friend, Winona Sharman. And thankfully, Ross got me up and going. We focused on a lot of strength work, a lot of back, a lot of core. Core was very important, still is.
Yep.
and legs. And I said to Ross, I want to get back riding my mountain bike and I want to get back running. And he's like, you'll do it. And I have.
Yep.
Yeah.
How long after your accident would you say that you were back running again?
5 months.
Jesus.
And that, yeah. And that wasn't like full on running. That was like I'd go down to the oval and I walk for a minute.
Yep.
And then I jog for a minute.
Yep.
And I did that for months.
Yep.
And then finally I'd work myself up where I'd like walk for a minute and I would run for 2 minutes and then I'd extend that out every few weeks.
Yeah.
And then finally I got to a stage and I think it might have been about, had my accident in February, I think it was about October I actually got to run continuously.
It's unreal. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
And so obviously running wasn't risky enough for you because you got into your mountain bike riding and then eventually back into horse riding again, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, after 6 months, I had a post-op appointment with a neurologist specialist, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to ask you, like, can I ride a mountain bike again? Can I ride a horse again? And he's like, is there anything that you don't do that's risky? I'm like, well, I'm not really one for sitting down watching TV and knitting, so no. And he said, well, I'm not going to stop you from doing what you love because... you know, mentally, you need to be able to do what you enjoy. He said, I'm happy for you to go back on the mountain bike, but please don't go getting air and doing all these jumps.
Yep.
I'm like, yeah, no, I can accept that one. And he said, but the horse, unless it's an income, I don't recommend it.
Yep.
He said, the trouble is, if you come off now, all your other discs are now at a high risk of fracturing. Because they're not going to be as strong anymore.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, damn it. I'm like, okay. So I accepted it. All right. No, not can't horse ride again. Poor me. Anyway, it's okay. I've got running. I can do other things. But then Giselle and I have been flat out with her riding that I'm like, oh, geez, I just want to get back on. So when I felt like I was strong enough, I jumped back on Giselle's pony. Couple of times I'd ride for all of 5 minutes.
Yeah.
With my back brace on.
Was it scary the first time you got back on?
Yeah, the first time. Yeah, it was. Yeah. And I literally just walked around. I think I might have broke into a little trot.
Mm.
And that was about it.
Yeah.
But her pony is just a ripper. We absolutely love him. He's just... we can 100% trust him.
Yeah.
And they say you shouldn't 100% trust a horse, but with him we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no, and then I got to a stage where I started riding a little bit longer and I started cantering, but I've never attempted to jump again. I don't think I ever will attempt to jump again because that just puts me at a higher risk of coming off.
Yep.
And it's one of those things that, yeah, maybe I am silly because I'm putting myself back out there again, but I figure, you know, life's too short. If it's something that I enjoy and if I'm sensible about it, and don't take it so serious.
Yeah.
So Giselle and I, yeah, I'm riding a little bit now. Not a lot, just a little bit. And we're happy just to go off in the bush and have a ride together.
Yeah.
We'll probably eventuate to the beach at some stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there also a part of you that you feel like you've, I don't know what the word is, but because you've got back on a horse after having this awful experience with it, you feel empowered by that, that you haven't let that experience sort of stop you? Do you get a bit of a buzz from that? Like, you love riding horses,
yeah,
so
absolutely.
You didn't let that stop you from doing what you love.
I did not let that stop me from doing something I loved, and it could have done. And maybe, I don't know, people probably say it probably should have done, but you know what? This is my life, and if that's what I enjoy doing, then that's what I like to do. So,
well, the alternative is to sit at home and wish you were on the horse and not be happy about it.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yep. And you know, like, just living that experience, you don't know how long you're on this earth for. Like, I mean, people are getting sick all the time, so you might as well go and do what you enjoy doing.
Yeah. Absolutely. I just wanted to ask you, though, with your mental toughness, like, and that's probably the main thing that's come out of this story is, you know, you've got to where you are and got through the challenge that you've had, I think, just from being, you know, stubborn and mentally tough. Do you have any theory of where that came from or when you actually learnt to be mentally strong or the reason for it?
I just think it's many things over the years, just all the challenges that I feel like I've had to overcome, it's just made me a lot stronger, more resilient. I appreciate things, the smaller things in life, so much more. I think just keeping fit and active, that's been a big thing, a part of my life.
Yep.
And that has motivated me. It's made me a positive person.
Mm-hmm.
Mentally stronger. Yeah, all those things.
Do you subscribe to the theory that everything happens for a reason?
I do now.
Yep.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. With all these challenges over the years, it's like there's definitely something in that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because I know that you said, you know, you're fitter and stronger and probably more mentally tough as well. But even with your running, you're running longer than you ever were before. Like, you're looking at doing a marathon, aren't you?
Look, I'd like to do a marathon.
Yep.
I have had lots of injuries in the past with my legs. I've got through to a half a marathon once before.
Yep.
I've always wanted to do a marathon. I'm at the stage now I could go and do half a marathon.
Yep.
My longest run so far is about 15 and a half Ks, which was last week. So I'm pretty close for a half marathon. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to rule out a marathon, that's for sure. Mm. When I was turned 40, I had so many things right. So by the time I turned 40, I want to run a marathon.
Yep.
Didn't quite get there. Did the half marathon because of the injuries. At 40, I wanted to get a tattoo with the kids' names, and I didn't. I decided, you know what? I'm going to get a horse.
Mm. Another sliding door moment.
That's when I had my accident. It was 2 weeks after I turned 40, actually.
Yep.
Yeah, so had I got the tattoo. Anyway, I've got the tattoo now at 41 instead.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. And as far as, you know, the future, are there any other plans or anything that you've got on your radar that you want to break into?
Yeah, so, yeah, that marathon is playing on my mind quite a lot at the moment, especially now that I am actually starting to clock up some more distances.
Yep.
So that could potentially happen. With the horse riding side of things, I wouldn't mind to get into some more Western kind of riding.
Yep.
So just probably get away from the English and the show jumping and all of those things and just a little bit more cash.
Yep.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what the future brings.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's looking good.
Anything that you've got on your radar, you're going to do it because, you know, the challenges that you've been through, these other things will be just, you know, piece of pie for you.
Yeah,
they'll be real easy for
Please
you.
Please don't challenge me much more.
Yeah, that's right. Well, hopefully you're on the downhill run now. You've had your challenges and everything now will be on your terms. But as I say, you know, it's been really good going through your journey. And I think, as I say, I think anything that you're going to do in the future, you're going to smash it because of what you've overcome. And I think it's just a great story and a great example to people of how strong the power of the mind is. And, you know, being stubborn and, you know, not accepting your circumstances as they are. Well, you know, this is shit, but there's a way out.
There
I know
is,
that yeah. I can...
always be worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So, you know, it's a good, great story of mental toughness. So... we'll keep an eye on you, mate, and see what your next achievements are. But as I say, you know, you'll definitely do it. So I wish you all the best and thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Brendan.
As I said, I'm sure whatever Tiff puts her mind to in the future, you can guarantee she'll smash it with flying colours. Like I said previously, the main takeaway from our chat is the power of the mind and how staying positive, stubborn and not taking no for an answer is so powerful and can help you achieve some amazing things and overcome some massive challenges. Tiff's story highlights the importance of having good people around you to support you in tough times, and also for others, the importance of reaching out to people in times of need. Even though they may not need your help, just knowing you're there brings them comfort and can motivate them further. When going through tough times, make sure you communicate with someone close to you, as it's a common theme of the pod. This is so important for mental health, as it helps lift the burden from you and helps you feel that you're not alone. And again, in any relationships, through the good and the bad times, make sure you continue to communicate so you're both on the same page. As Northwest Tassie is a remote area, I just want to quickly tell you about a great organisation doing their bit to help the rural community deal with mental health and suicide. Rural Alive and Well, or better known as RAW, R-A-W, have a mission to build healthy and resilient rural and remote communities to reduce the prevalence of suicide. RAW specialises in providing a proactive outreach and one-on-one support service, which addresses situational stresses and increases protective factors to minimise the risk of suicide. RAW is non-clinical, genuine and non-intrusive. The service is confidential with no fees for participants, and it uses a person-centred shared goals approach. RAW adopts a culturally sensitive, strength-based and collaborative approach to delivering services. Their team come from a range of backgrounds and receive training and ongoing support to provide evidence-informed care to people. To access their services, call 1800 729 827. You can find them on Facebook and Instagram or jump on their website www.rawtas.com.au.